The first thing I want to talk about is bad math. There is so much of it. First, let's debunk the conspiracies. I've heard so many insane theories about this virus and how it's a bioweapon that was released by the Chinese. Why would you release something you can't control? And I'm sure there's a lot of bioweaponry research that goes on. It's likelier that if you follow the money, you'll get a much better answer. China has a multi-trillion dollar engine. Trade is how they survive. So you can imagine whoever the regional manager for Wuhan not wanting to report to his boss, we've unleashed something that's going to kill a whole bunch of people. When they're carting off dozens or hundreds or thousands of bodies, you got to tell somebody. So at that point, that starts to affect the economy. And that's why they delayed telling the world. They've got a gravy train going and no one wants it to stop. And by the way, it's not any different here. Trump, the last thing he wanted on his hands, especially in an election year, is a recession. And that's exactly what antivirus, for lack of a better term, measures would do. And that's what they're doing now. So that delay that we experienced in acting was denial rooted in pragmatism, financial pragmatism, unfortunately. Now, the delay in acting does not give you an excuse for a delay in prepping. And I'm going to get into that in a little bit. But first, let's just jump into the numbers. There are no good numbers. That is the first problem here. A lot of people are looking at case numbers. Case numbers are completely tied to testing. And our testing numbers are really low. The only people who really get tested are people who are either coming into the country, people who checked into a hospital because they were experiencing some sort of symptoms, or people who are around them who also need to be tested because they're exposed. That's it. We haven't unrolled testing to the general population the way South Korea did. So when you look at the death rate, you're looking at it not as a percentage of the population, but as a percentage of the people who are tested, which is relatively small. The second thing is death. Now, death is a more accurate number because if you're dead, that is very provable. Whether you're infected, not so much, because you could be a carrier and not know it. The problem with death is that it's a lagging indicator. It takes people a while to get the symptoms, experience serious effects, and then finally, unfortunately, die. And that causes a delay in the numbers. So when you see deaths going up, the actual critically ill number could be considerably higher because the death rate is a little bit behind. So when you put those two problematic numbers together, that is a terrible metric. And especially when you try to compare across countries. So the graph that they keep showing stacks up all the countries to show you the curve. Now, the shape of the curve, yeah, you can use that, but you have to normalize for the population size. And you also have to normalize for the level of testing, which is different across every single country. Then you have a much more accurate view. It's fine for media to report it, but it's also alarming because you end up with a way higher death rate. So the panic, I'm not saying it's unjustified, but it's based on some really bad numbers. There's so much we don't know. When you test a person, you don't know if that person had it and then healed or just didn't have it if they test negative. So there's no way to really know what the real infection rate is. There have been a couple of situations where there was deep analysis. And the first is the cruise ship. By the way, if you're going on cruises, why? It's like travel for people who hate travel and hate finding new interesting places. You're cooped up on this boat with a bunch of freeloaders who are just chugging free meals. Anyway, this particular cruise that got infected and no one would let them back on shore had 3,700 passengers. And remember, this ship is like a giant petri dish. Everyone's just bouncing around. It's kind of like a perfect contained sample size. And in this sample, 700 people were infected. That's out of 3,700. That's about 19%. And seven died. That's a roughly 1% death rate. 1%, not of the total, but of the people who were infected. If you did it of the total population, it's only 0.19%. And that's a much less scary number. There's a really interesting blog post by the co-director of Stanford's Meta Research Innovation Center. So he's a credentialed guy. I invited him on the podcast. He didn't respond to my email. Maybe he's a little busy with coronavirus. Anyway, according to him, the real case fatality ratio, that means of the number of people who are diagnosed with it, would likely be somewhere between 0.5% to 1%. And 1% is what it was on the ship. So it's a pretty good sample size. But it's not completely accurate because there are a lot more old people on the boat. Anyway, so he estimates that this infection rate would translate to about 10,000 deaths. I don't see how he got to that number. The real number, I think, using his own calculations and adjusting for population size, would be about 188,000. So the low number is 33,000 deaths. The high number, 500,000. The realistic number, about 188,000. And then the wildly aggressive number, that means if 1% of the entire population died, would be 3.3 million. Then I looked at the Italy example, and here's what I found interesting about it. Only three of the victims, which is 0.8%, had previously no other medical conditions, but almost half of the victims had at least three prior illnesses. And the median age of the people who were infected was 63. And the median age of the people who died is 79 and a half. There are some other stats that I've seen where younger people have been getting infected, and it's certainly a risk. Those are probably outliers, or they're people who had undiagnosed issues. Take that for what it's worth. I think the Italy example is really interesting. That doesn't mean this thing is not dangerous. It is very dangerous. But how do we weigh that danger against the other dangers of some of the actions that we're taking? The other stat that I saw was in the US, 40% of the patients who got sick were between ages 20 and 54. Now, I thought the American situation would be different because I don't know if you've seen our store shelves or the tourists walking through Las Vegas or New York. We're not in the greatest shape as a country. There are probably people who maybe don't have great healthcare or are walking around with undiagnosed conditions like diabetes or heart disease. So I think that could drive up our numbers. Even though we're not as old, we could be more sick than some of the other countries. But on some level, I had this hope with all the GMOs and preservatives and horrible foods that we eat, that the Cheeto layer around our cells would keep the coronavirus from attaching itself. Unfortunately, my great hopes have been shattered. Anyway, so if you look at age as a big risk factor, which it is, the countries that are really exposed are Japan, which is 47, Germany, which is 47, Italy, which is 45 and a half. Now, by comparison, the US is at 38 years old. The crazy thing about that is the death rates in Germany are extremely low, and Japan has handled this really well. We're trending very similar to Italy and Spain, which is not a good thing. Some people would make the argument that we should save lives, even if it costs us a huge hit to our economy. I don't think that's the case. What we've ended up doing could be way worse. So let me make my case before you break your phone or wherever it is that you're watching this. I think the main thing that we're trying to solve for here is this thing peaks really high, really fast. We don't have the beds, we don't have the respirators, we don't have the hospital workers to take care of all those people. So that's why everyone talks about flattening this curve, which means you prolong how long this thing runs, but you also don't overwhelm medical facilities. So the reason I don't think shutting down the whole economy is the right move, is the deaths caused by coronavirus and then the deaths caused by a massive recession or even a depression, those lines cross really fast. Never in our history have we shut down business this quickly. And we could potentially endanger a big chunk of 330 million people in a lot of different ways. So let's just take one example, suicide rate. During the Depression in 1929, when the stock market crashed, stockbrokers were jumping out of windows. In fact, that's why they made a rule that you can't have high-rise buildings with windows that open. Now, a lot of you might be saying, they're stockbrokers, let them go. That's very, very cruel of you. This kind of an economic shock is detrimental to a lot of people. In the years of the Depression was 22 suicides out of every 100,000 people. That number is bigger than the low end of the coronavirus estimate. We could just jump forward to 2018. More than 48,000 people killed themselves in a good year. 2018 was, by all measures, a very good economic year in terms of unemployment, in terms of GDP, in terms of salaries rising. Now, without doing any fancy math, what if we created a 20% unemployment? And when people can't support their families, is it conceivable that that rate could double or triple? You very quickly, just with one metric, suicides, start to hit coronavirus numbers. That doesn't include all the other things that happen when you crash the economy. Crime, loss of medical coverage, chronic conditions that get created or aggravated because of economic pressures. What about all the people whose retirement savings go away and they need it because they're at retirement? The real number you're comparing to is not just, we're going to look at what coronavirus could do, but the treatment for coronavirus can do as much or more damage. So what is the economic cost of human life? Isn't every human being priceless? Absolutely not. And you know how you can tell that to be true? If you went on Instagram, you'd very quickly find a lot of selfies of celebrities with face masks. How did all of them get face masks? Well, we're not equal. That is the reality. Different people get differential treatment. And I'm not defending it. I'm not saying that's how it should be. It should not. But that's how it is right now. I'm saying that only to establish that there's a differential in the value of human life. So if we agree that there's a differential, then we should also agree that there's a number to measure the difference. Ironically, the government does this for us. So the U.S. Office of Management and Budget actually has a price on human life. They estimate that number to be somewhere between $7 and $9 million. What if we were to give every single family who had someone die $8 million? What would that cost? On the low end of my estimate, which is 33,000 deaths, the total would have been $264 billion. Now, if it's my likely case, which is 188,000 people, that's going to be $1.5 trillion, which, by the way, is very close to the rescue package that the government is talking about. I think it's even higher now. Now, if we reach 500,000, that would be $4 trillion. There is another measure that we could use. The payout that the government gave to 9/11 victims, and actually not the victims, but the families, that number is much lower. That's $1 million. And if you have 33,000 deaths, that's $33 billion. And on the high end, 500,000 deaths would be $500 billion. So somewhere in between those numbers is the human cost of this virus. What this doesn't include are people who are ill or other disruptions to people's lives that happen even when there isn't a death in the family. But there is a number, and that number is not mine. That's the government's number. And you know what? Every single insurance company and every single person with an insurance policy has a dollar figure attached to their life, whether they like it or not. When you pay for that policy, the level of coverage is basically the value of your life. You would think life was priceless, but it isn't.